And Jerry Corsi with us, Hunting Hitler. We're going to take phone calls with Jerry this hour. I've still got a few more questions, and then we'll get right to you here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Jerry Corsi with us. So, Jerry, assuming Hitler went to Argentina, did he socialize with all the other Nazis who were out there?
Yes, the colony, the German colony in Argentina was very strong. So when Hitler arrived, he was a celebrity. And in fact, this U.S. naval intelligence in this memo sent, with the U-boat 530 surfaces in Mar del Plata, and naval intelligence reports back from Buenos Aires to naval intelligence in Washington that there's good reason to believe that Eva Braun and Hitler were on this boat and were landed in the south of Argentina before the boat came to Mar del Plata. They document there's been great celebrations going on in Germany, and people in Mar del Plata and all through Germany are really celebrating the German community. The naval intelligence took it as a great celebration because Hitler had arrived. Hitler was treated as royalty, was absconded first away, into this hotel in La Falda, mm-hmm. then brought down to Barcelona to a resort designed very much looking like Berchtesgaden, a big picture window looking out on lake and mountains in this remote area of Patagonia where you could only reach it by airplane that landed on the lake in front of the house. I mean, Hitler was very carefully kept out of public sight, and it appears that, from the reports, his appearance had been changed, so you wouldn't necessarily recognize him immediately as Hitler.
Was there somebody in Argentina who kind of had the purse strings for the Nazis and said, okay, you get here, here's a little money for you, here's some money for you? Because obviously they needed cash.
Yes, in fact, I document several of the agents. There was a guy named Fuller who was this guy was a German who had been working with very closely with Perón, a banker who had been going back and forth to Germany and was very well known in Argentina, actually set up the bank accounts where Bormann moved the money in and then was available and around with Perón to access those bank accounts once Bormann got to Argentina. I mean, the taking out of Hitler, the whole details of it, were all organized and planned. Hitler appears to have left Berlin on this experimental helicopter, which was a folk ACHGELIS model, twin rotor helicopter the Nazis had developed, brought Hitler from the Führer's bunker in Berlin to an airfield outside Linz, Austria. And then there's a manifest in South America where Hitler flew from Austria to Barcelona on April 26, 1945. They flew in a Junkers 290 A6 airplane, and it was piloted by a German Luftwaffe, a very famous bomber pilot, a guy named Werner Baumbach. Now, Baumbach writes a book after the war called Broken Swastika, and I've got a copy of the book here. He says that they'd fixed up long-range airplanes and flying boats so they could get anywhere on Earth. I mean, the Nazis were prepared for the escape routes. The escape routes didn't just develop instantly. They had been very carefully planned. The Vatican was involved. Money was laundered through the Vatican. This whole rat line was created where identity papers were given so Nazis could have visas to go into Argentina. An elaborate scheme in which literally thousands of Nazis escaped, not just the top Nazis, but thousands escaped. And it was all wink, wink, U.S. intelligence knowing it was going on and making no real serious attempt to shut these Nazis down or to catch them.
Where did Hitler live in Argentina?
In Bariloche. At first, he was at this Eden Hotel in La Falda. They brought him up there with the Eichhorns, the family that had funded Hitler going back into the 20s. The Eichhorns had set up, they were industrialists, very wealthy, would go back and have lunch and dinner with Hitler in the Reich's Chancellery. Hitler sent the Eichhorns the first Mercedes-Benz, that was in South America. It was a personal gift to the Eichhorns. They ended up with the Bariloche. There's a villa. It's bordering a lake, the Nahal Haupi Lake. It's outside the city of Bariloche in the province of Rio Negro, Argentina.
Did they build this place for Hitler?
Yes, it was built. It was a 6,000 square foot estancia, like a resort place.
Yeah.
It was built on over 1,000 acres of land on the banks of this lake. It's protected by dense forest. It was a 10-bedroom mansion. I referenced pictures of it. You can see on the internet. Still exists. It was built in 1943. The architect was an Alejandro Bustillo, and it was built at the request and the financing of German supporters of Hitler, who in 1943 were living in Argentina and were preparing for the possibility, even in 1943, that they would build and construct this elaborate resort residence for Hitler and Eva Braun once they lost the war and got out of Germany.
They kind of figured the war was going to lose, even in 43.
In 1943, and I document in the book, Himmler, who was, again, one of the top Nazis, and Bormann began having meetings together because, of course, this was the time we were beginning, it was clear we were going to be taking over northern Africa. The U.S. Army was on the move, probably going to invade through Italy, certainly coming into Europe. And Stalingrad was not going well on the Eastern Front for the Nazis. And so top Nazis knew that this war was not going to be won. The United States was ultimately going to defeat Germany. We were going to be just too powerful. I think from the very beginning, I don't think that Hitler really wanted to fight the United States. I think that was what the Rudolf Hess move, flight into London was all about during the war. I think at one point in the war, Hitler would have been happy to have made peace with Great Britain, keep the United States out of war, and just fight the Nazis fighting the Soviets. But I think it's probably one of the next books I'll have to write, is I think that FDR largely maneuvered the United States into the war by inducing Japan to attack us at Pearl Harbor. Right. There's increasing evidence of that as well.
There's a big story there. So
there's a big story.
Do you think Hitler traveled at all, or he stayed in Argentina and died there?
He stayed in Argentina and died there. Now, he may have. There's sightings. I've read about them, and I refer to them briefly in the book, of Hitler, for instance, going to Brazil or traveling here or traveling there, or showing up at a resort. But essentially, Hitler stayed in seclusion, and those Nazis who wanted to meet with him came to visit with him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they had meetings and plannings, and the idea was for the Nazis to continue, at least,
They probably thought they were going to come back to power again.
Well, there was two plans. I probably should write a book on this, too. The two plans were essentially to see the United States move in the direction of National Socialism, and to have Germany emerge at the head of a united Europe. And some of these plans have remarkable,
they're happening now.
We get Germany at the head of the EU, and a good argument can be made that the planners of the EU going back into the 40s and after the war did see this as the reemergence of the Nazis in a sense, but without a war. Now, Germany was able to take over Europe. If Hitler had been offered, you can have head of Germany over the EU, here's the NSA and the CIA, they can get everybody's telephone conversations, it's much better than they ever had with the Gestapo, and we'll fight your lying wars with a military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about and Kennedy tried to prevent, I think Hitler would have signed up in a minute.
Yeah, I think so, too. Let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Alex in Redondo Beach, get things going in California. Alex, go ahead.
How you doing? Thank you for the show tonight. It's been fascinating. I just hope this information can get out there to all the mainstream academics and, historians and teachers out there, because it's amazing to realize this. But my question is about, I wanted to know if your guest ever has heard of, there's, in the hills of Hollywood, maybe I think in Malibu near the Pacific Palisades, there's an abandoned kind of fortress. I don't know if it's still there, but it was kind of known in the 30s, I guess, some American, you know, Nazi sympathizers. They bought this ranch, and I guess it was kind of planned to be a, you know, hideout and also a, and it's a fortress for Hitler to kind of run from America when he was, if he had won the war. I believe it's still there, but I don't know if they tore it down. I wanted to know if your guests ever heard of this place. It's well known. I think a lot of neo-Nazis and a couple of novelists over the years have been there, but it was like in the 30s where they planned out a place where Hitler was going to rule from, you know, this area, Southern California. Has your guest ever heard of this place?
Yes, I have. I just have not researched it. And you've got to remember that there are a lot, there were in the 30s and the 40s, before we get into the war, but certainly the 30s, there were a lot of Nazi sympathizers in the United States. In fact, big rallies, Nazi rallies held even in Madison Square Garden.
It was called Murphy's Ranch.
It's Murphy's Ranch, and I believe it probably does exist, and I think, you know, I'll have to research that as part of the story. I also appreciated the caller's first comment, and that is, it's really what got me so deeply into this, is that so much of this intelligence CIA disinformation about, you know, Hitler being killed and that cover story, so much of our history is disinformation planted by intelligence agencies. Researching the Hitler story confirmed to me again the premise that governments lie, and they lie to the people constantly to cover up the truth of what's really going on in politics and economics. And it's a shame that we don't have a much more active mainstream media that takes at, you know, we should never take at face value what government says. That's one of the major lessons out of this entire elaborate charade to convince the world that Hitler died when, as Stalin said, there's really no evidence of it.
What kind of a hell do you think Hitler was going through? Because he should rot in hell, no doubt, Jerry. But what do you think he was going through, knowing and seeing what had unfolded, that his beloved Germany was chopped up and, you know, that the Soviets did their thing, the Americans did theirs? Do you think it tormented him?
I think Hitler has to be looked at as basically a psychopath. I think he basically felt the German people let him down. They weren't good enough, that he was still superior. He wasn't going to face justice. He viewed this bourgeois justice being paraded by the Soviets into a trial or the United States. He wasn't going to do that. The idea of committing suicide, no, he wasn't going to kill himself.
No, he was a coward.
He's a coward, and he was basically, you know, a psychological, pathological killer who didn't have deep feelings, I don't think, in terms of complex emotions. He wanted to escape. That makes sense. The idea that he write a will, you know, and marry Eva Braun is something that, you know, maybe some Hollywood writer would make up as a soap opera, but it isn't reality.
Why couldn't somebody like him, who had so much charisma, evil as it was, to make this a better world? Instead of being evil, why couldn't he have used those strengths that he had to develop and motivate? And he did some incredible things getting Germany to where they were technologically. Why couldn't he use that to make this a great planet?
Well, that's a wonderful question. That, you know, one of the people I knew very well in my life was Edward Bernays. My father hired him. He's the founder of public relations.
He sure was.
Edward Bernays wrote a book in 1928 called Propaganda. And it was used worldwide. It was really the beginning of disinformation. And I became a buddy of Edward Bernays. I had dinner with him all the time when I was in Cambridge. We talk about it. Goebbels begged Bernays to come over to Germany and help them out. Of course, Bernays was a Jew. Bernays was not interested in helping the Nazis.
Right.
But the Nazis took everything he had. They learned how to stage these elaborate Nuremberg rallies. I mean, they presented Hitler as this messiah. I mean, the Nazis were wonderful in learning all Bernays' techniques.
They were great marketers.
Marketing, and mass marketing, so that the minds of everybody was affected to say, this is wonderful, this is going to be the future, and to buy into it.
Yep, they didn't have TV, they had radio, and they did a lot of film documentaries of Hitler.
Yes, it was Leni Riefenstahl, who was, I was trying to think of in the first hour, who did these movies, The Triumph of the Will, and Hitler with these hundreds of thousands of Germans in Nuremberg, and all lined up in all different parts of Germany. Hitler marches in and gives a speech. I mean, this is good theater. This is great theater. And Bernays taught the Nazis how to do this. Now, the problem is that You know, it can be used for good and evil. And the techniques of, you know, being able to put on a show and convince everybody, this is fundamental to disinformation that governments do all the time. And it needs, you know, I have to risk every time I write one of these books of getting ridiculed or people saying, you know, it's a kooky idea. But look at all the evidence I've found from the archives. Look at the documents, the Nazi submarine surfacing, the naval intelligence saying Hitler was likely on the boat. All this suppressed.
Yeah.
And you need an active Fourth Estate, an active media to not take what the government says, even today, you know, whether it's Bush or Obama or whomever. I mean, I think our leaders are given the propaganda from the intelligence agencies and Bernays' techniques as to how to market it to a compliant media and sell it.
It's a propaganda that got us into Iraq.
Well, I mean, you know, sure, no weapons of mass destruction found with Saddam Hussein. Well, big surprise, you know. This is the intelligence agencies pushing us into another war with George W. Bush. Or you say to with Obama, why are we going to go to war in Syria when, you know, the guys we're going to have to fight with are Al-Qaeda and these, you know, rogue groups from Islam.
Yeah, I mean, who hate us.
Who hate us. And the UN says, well, we don't think it was Assad who used the chemical weapons. It's probably the rebels. Yet the CIA, John Kerry says, I've got the CIA report, and it shows that it was Assad. Well, you can't see the CIA report. This is all nonsense. And it, you know, this is not a comment directed against any particular president. I think every one of our presidents, the only president, I think, who had the courage to stand up and say, the CIA needs to be broken into 1,000
pieces. It's Kennedy.
Kennedy. And by the way, we're going to print our own money. We don't need the Federal Reserve either.
Well, look what happened to him.
And he got killed.
Let's go to John in Sheridan, Wyoming. Go ahead, John.
Another great show, George, if I may, sir. Let me give you two quick comments and then a question for Mr. Corsi.
And if we hit the break, John, I'll hold you over, okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you. Another good book that shows a lot of this information is Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler from 1976, and it was written by Anthony Sutton. Great book that shows the
book. I have it. It's an outstanding book. It's a great book.
Right. Between it shows the complicity between our Wall Street crowd and our government and the Nazis. And, of course, in the Victory at Sea series, the episode Beneath the Southern Cross showed a lot of this German influence that they had in Argentina during the war. You're absolutely right, Dr.
And by the way, now, Sutton almost destroyed his career by writing that book.
Yeah,
Sutton
because he
had a very prominent academic career until he told the story that it was the Dulleses and the Bush family and the Harriman family on Wall Street that gave Hitler his rise.
And he showed from the August 1st, 1938 edition of the New York Times, where Henry Ford was awarded the highest civilian award awarded by the Third Reich, because just before the outbreak of the war, he built 7 truck factories for Hitler throughout Europe.
That's good. Hold on, John. We'll get your question when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, investigative mythologist William Henry joins us. We'll be talking about his work about the future. When we come back in a moment, we'll take final phone calls with Jerry Corsi, Hunting Hitler. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Jerry Corsi with us. We'll go back to John and Sheridan, Wyoming. Go ahead, John. I'll let you pick it up.
Thank you very much, sir. Sure. I'd like to give this scenario and see if Dr. Corsi agrees with my hypothesis. Around 1989, Rudolf Hess, I believe, was suicided there in Spandau Prison while it was being guarded by the British forces. And I think the reason why this happened is because there was mounting pressure throughout Europe, since I believe that Hess was not involved with the atrocities, unlike Hitler and Bormann and the rest of them, that there was a lot of pressure to release Hess, and had he been released, he would have exposed the complicity between the German government and the British, French, and American governments throughout the war. And I also believe, Dr. Corsi, that this is why George S. Patton was murdered, because he knew of too many of the stinky little deals that were going on and was going to talk about it, and they made sure he never did.
Well, with Hess, I think you've got a very good point. One of my good friends, Thomas Lipscomb, who is an journalist and created New York Times books, actually, has written a play on Hess. He's trying to get produced. I've worked with Tom on this. It's a brilliant script, brilliant playwright. But at any rate, the whole idea is that Hess's mission was to go to Great Britain and to negotiate a peace with between Germany and England. And I think Hitler wanted that. And I agree that Hess was very aware of the back channels that existed between the Nazis, the British, the Allies, the back channels with U.S. intelligence. And Alan Dulles is one of the unappreciated stories, how our CIA came emerged out of the Nazi Gestapo, and how much we brought Hitler to power with Wall Street, and then helped the Nazis escape, with Dulles getting the Nazi money reinvested back into the U.S. stock market through Swiss banking agents. I mean, these stories need to be told. The American people need to know the truth. And I'm glad you brought it up. I think also George Patton's death is highly suspicious. And there's also been a very good book written on that recently, on the fact that it was an assassination by, again, U.S. intelligence, because Patton opposed Russia and wanted to go to war with Russia, but he knew he was being blocked, in a sense, by U.S. intelligence that was not ready for a war. The Dulleses were happy to have a prolonged Cold War and to put us against communism so that they could really build, you know, the base of what I believe ended up being National Socialism that John Kennedy tried to block and was assassinated for. That was the whole subject of the whole purpose of my book when I wrote Killing Kennedy. And the point I want to make is that these are not history stories. The assassination of Kennedy, the escape of Hitler are not history stories. It's what's going on today. You want to understand how intelligence operations act and work, and they're becoming massive with the NSA and the other organizations around the world. Americans need to wake up and understand the extent to which these groups exist to lie to us.
Do you think Hitler was insane?
Yeah, probably classically, yes, I think you'd have to say he was
psychopath.
I mean, he manifests all kinds of bizarre behavior. I mean, as I said, this, you know, the incident in 1931 when he killed his niece, this Gelly, this, you know, Rubal, the 23-year-old niece in his apartment, her naked body found, you know, nose broken, bruises, shot with Hitler's pistol, and Bormann, aide to Hitler, and Nazi aide to Hitler, and Mueller, who was then police chief or police operative in Munich, come across the body. They put it in a lead casket. They ship it out of Munich. They call her death a suicide, and they cover it all up. I mean, Hitler is going through very bizarre behavior here with his niece sexually, and the whole background of Hitler has just so many psychotic problems to it. I mean, as I point out many, many times, you know, that Hitler, the whole Edward Bernays public relations image, Hitler understood making himself and those who made Hitler. There's some pictures. Hoffman was the great photographer for the Nazis, and there's some very silly pictures of Hitler becoming Hitler, posing for Hoffman and looking like the Führer. Hitler was a pretty goofy guy, really, when you take a look at Hitler without all the trappings of the public relations imagery that Goebbels manufactured to make him look like a messianic giant, when he was really a pretty weird vegetarian guy who, no offense to vegetarians, but I mean, Hitler was bizarre in his eating habits, his sexual habits, his hatred of Jews, obsessive.
And occultist.
A cultist going, you know, all the Nazi rune symbols that are in the SS and in the Nazi rise to power, all the Nazi technology. And then the other part about Hitler being, I think, insane is all the bad decisions made. I mean, why attack Russia when you're having a war with Great Britain? Do one first. Why the Jews had been great war heroes for the Nazis, for Germany in World War One, and the scientists were the most, you know, some of the most brilliant in the world. Hitler goes after killing the Jews in a genocidal fashion. he expends resources that could have been otherwise used. It kills people who would have fought for Germany brilliantly. And the scientists come to the United States and help us develop the weapons Hitler could have had. It doesn't make any sense.
All right, back to the calls we go. Janice is in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hi, Janice. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Thank you so much for this wonderful program
You're
tonight.
Very welcome.
And Gerald, fascinating, fascinating. I would just like to make a comment followed up by a question. And
okay.
My comment is that talk about very well planned. Have you heard, and there is information on the internet, that Bormann had a son who was brought to the United States, and his name happened to be changed to George Bush. And he was taken in by the Harriman family and then went on to Yale to become very important in the CIA and eventually got right up there with everybody else that did
And you mean H.W.
addresses and talked about, we have a new age coming. The new world order is coming. Okay?
I
wondered if you knew that connection.
I didn't hear that.
There's the actual story is on the internet, and it's
is it a myth?
No, it's one of the George H.W. Bush. I do not believe. I think he is who he says he is, and came from the Prescott Bush family. And I'm not putting that George H.W. Bush is the son of Bormann, but there is this whole very interesting story about Sikorsky, one of the Nazi operatives, I guess, kind of a commando, and I guess it's George Sharif, I think is the name, and there's some very interesting connections with the Nazi intelligence agencies slipping people into the United States and double and triple identities. I think the Bush family's ties to Nazi Germany come from the Averell Harriman firm, and Prescott Bush is working with that firm, and George Walker working with that firm. And, you know, the idea of financing Hitler in the 1930s, which Wall Street did. But this Bormann story, I think, is very interesting and not true, but fascinating.
Let's go to next up, Ted in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Welcome to the program, Ted.
Hey. Yeah, great show, George.
Thank you, Ted.
Really appreciate it. Do you believe that that Gregory Douglass acquired the papers of Heinrich Müller?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Gregory Douglass is a very interesting character. He's not very credible. He, you know, has some parts of his background that that raise questions about his credibility. The Mueller story, Douglass wrote three books on Mueller and claimed to have interviewed Mueller. And I've not made up my mind yet whether those books are fanciful or whether they're accurate. I've got to go look for some of the documents that Douglass claims to have. I do think, though, there's plenty of independent evidence that Mueller, head of the Gestapo, survived and got out of Germany into Argentina.
Well, he says he was in Switzerland, and then he went to work for the Army Counterintelligence.
Yes, he did.
No, in the early 1960s, I served over 3 years in the Army Counterintelligence, and I heard the story firsthand from my associates how Galen was recruited, where he was offered, where he demanded $7 million to come to work for us. And Douglass says in his book that Galen only got $5
million.
And
yeah,
then he was upset because he only got $1 million to come to work for the U.S. Now, I think that is pretty credible. And of course, it was a very explosive thing that had to be kept secret. So I've gone through, I've done the same thing, trying to check out Douglass, and there's some highly critics, but Corson, who's quite an expert on intelligence operations, confirmed at least part of what Douglass published in those books. And of course, there's a detailed description on how Mueller got Hitler out of Germany. That I think you some of those details you have, like the helicopter and the flight to Barcelona. And I don't know if you use this other book or not, Donald McHale's book, Hitler, the Survival Myth.
Yes.
He, of course, he came to the conclusion that Trevor Roper was right, but Roper really got very violently angry about the book that Douglas came out with.
Well, Douglas's books have a lot of solid information in them, and I believe that the Mueller information in Douglas's books is correct. Mueller got out. He works for U.S. intelligence in Switzerland. He got out and got to Argentina. And I don't dismiss Mueller's books out of hand. The other book, by the way, is very, very good, is The Escape of Adolf Hitler. It's by Simon Dunstan and Gerard Williams. It's called Gray Wolf, The Escape of Hitler. You know, people don't realize how much there is on the record, how much research has been done, how many documents are in the archive that I show you in Hunting Hitler. But the idea that Hitler escaped has been a very viable and credible idea since Eisenhower told Stars and Stripes in October 1945 that there was reason to believe Hitler was yet alive. What we've been all fed is a lie, this bourgeois silly story of Hitler's dual suicide. And when you look at the eyewitness accounts, no two eyewitnesses agree. They're all making up the same cover story. And I think what they're covering up is they knew Hitler got away. One has Hitler shooting himself in the right temple. The other one has himself shooting himself in the mouth. The other has him not shooting himself, but taking cyanide. All the eyewitness stories conflict. I devote a chapter to showing you just how not credible the eyewitnesses in the bunker were. No one saw Hitler's suicide. That's the truth.
All right, let's take one or two more calls, if we can. Bonnie and Pahrump, welcome to the program, Bonnie. Hi there.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I just want to say that I'm so thrilled that you wrote this book. I heard that you were coming on last week, and I was just ecstatic about it because these are things that I've just realized in the last few months, and I'm actually going to be writing one here coming up on the same subject.
Good.
But I want to ask you a quick question, and then I have some comments that I want to make about it. And the question is, has anyone threatened you at all about this?
I don't ever discuss any of that. I'm a journalist. I'm a public figure, and everybody gets their share of. But, you know, I just continue working and continue, you know, believing in God, trusting in God, and going forward every day.
Gotcha. Okay. But the comments, the information that I wanted to share here is that I grew up in a neighborhood full of Nazis, and I never knew it until just a few months ago when I had been finding out about Operation Paperclip and you know, all of this stuff that
where did you grow up?
I grew up in Kentucky, and my father worked for General Electric, and our neighborhood was a suburban neighborhood that was very, very simple neighborhood, but it was just full of Germans, and these people, interestingly, most of them, their children went on to become doctors and psychologists, even though these were working class neighborhood. And my next door neighbor was Ikey. And I did some research and discovered that Ikey was head of the German concentration camp and that his plane went down in 1941, just inside the border of Russia, because he was going to look for his son-in-law who had disappeared or who had, you know, was missing. And his body was never found. And I thought it was interesting. You know, there were a couple of, you know, you talk about these conflicting stories about this, about his body, but I know he got away and he ended up there. And these people were very close to General Electric because General Electric was actually developing the technology that they were using or had developed it, was helping them build the weaponry that they were using. And yes, they were. They had at that time anti-gravity ships and they were using them. To get around, and Hitler was traveling quite far with using this technology. And in fact, George had a speaker on just last week talking about a mission that they sent, our president sent, because they found out that there was a base in Antarctica where they were hiding away. And in fact, they were using these things to travel quite quite, you know, great distances around the earth and quite fast. And I think my father must have known that these people were Nazis, because he would always be spying on them. You know, he would always be talking about it. He never really told us what he did.
That's a great story. Sorry to cut you off, but we only have a minute left. Jerry, I want you to wrap things up here with Hunting Hitler. It's brand new. It's just out. And you wanted to be on Coast with it, and you sure did.
Well, George, I say always that my time in Coast, it's the fastest 3 hours of my life. I don't know where it goes.
Oh, it does go by fast, doesn't it?
And thank you. I mean, I really want the American people to see the... But I wrote this book. It's not a long book. It's a short book. It's, you know, but I've got all the... I wanted it to be an easy read where you could really see the evidence for yourself that Hitler escaped. And I've got even... I show you the documents in the middle of the book that I got out of the archives. You can see the U-530, the submarine that naval intelligence believed Hitler escaped on. You can see the crew. I've got their pictures in here from the archives. I mean, I try to do extensive documentary research on everything that I write. And this is not just history. My whole point here is understand disinformation, government disinformation, intelligence information. We helped Hitler escape is the point of the book.
That's a huge story. Hunting Hitler. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.